Blog Talk Radio.
I'm your host, Paul Gant, alongside Jeremy Espy. And for the next hour, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And, of course, you will get a heavy dose of our opinion. If you have an opinion, the number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgant. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgant. You can send email messages to the show at goforit.gant@gmail.com. You can follow the show on Twitter at goforitgant. That's goforitgant, and that's where you can follow us on Twitter. And we're expected to be joined tonight by two football wives, one Pilar Sanders, the wife of Deion Sanders, and also Dawn Newfield, the wife of Ryan Newfield, and they're going to come on and they're going to talk about the show, their life, and more. And it should be very interesting. They get their take on the show, and should be a good old time here tonight on Go For It. Jeremy?
Paul?
How are you?
I'm much like your man, Donovan McNabb. I can't remember his name. He's so far gone from my memories. I'm doing pretty good.
Well, and,
yeah, he's had a bang up season there, Paul. He's made a big jackpot.
Not a great year, but I guess a better year than Kevin Cobb. Kind of hard to have a bad year. Kind of hard to have any type of year when you only play what three games, two and a half games. Excuse me, three and a half games. But anyway, regardless of that, I mean, who cares? I mean, Kevin Cobb is an afterthought at this point, and the way Donovan's been playing, he's somewhat of an afterthought as well. But I want to start with the NFL, and I want to start with my New England Patriots. Yes, the New England Patriots, a team that I touted all year long, a team that I said will win the AFC East, a team that I said was the best team in the AFC East, a team that throttled the New York Jets 45-3 at Foxborough, 26 straight victories for Tom Brady at home. The Patriots just dominated. Brady, 326 yards, four touchdowns, and they sent a big message, loud and clear. Rex, can you hear me? Mark Sanchez, can you hear me? Bart Scott, can you hear me? All your talkers in New York, can you hear and smell what Tom Brady is cooking? Because Tom Brady just went off. He went off, and they just dominated the New York Jets. Jeremy's Jets. They dominated them.
Jeremy and
let me interrupt you quickly for a second. Willie Rose, New York Jets. He was the guy that was counting the New York Jets, and I text Willie Rose during the game, and I asked Willie what was going on, and he basically says that the Jets did not come to play, and that's kind of the understatement of the year. The New York Jets did not come to play.
No, you're yucking it up, but let's look at this and honestly say, and I think, I mean, definitively, yes, they absolutely positively didn't come to play, but, I mean, kudos to a big Monday night game, and Tom Brady looked great. If you're the Jets, though, I mean, I think you look at a game where you're just, they were so completely outplayed, and I think that's a game they want to forget. I don't think you have too many repeat games like that. They're a Rex Ryan coach team. It was totally unindicative of how they played. It was the first, I think, really first major big game of Sanchez's career. He has, and he's going against a Hall of Fame quarterback. I don't see this happening again. I'm not saying they're beating the Patriots, because I can tell you unequivocally, you have to be concerned. I mean, I am. If I'm a Jets fan.
But you are a guy on this air who touted the Jets.
They're
Mark Sanchez. I mean, you touted these guys. And as you got caught in the hype, you watched Hard Knocks, you got excited, and you saw a 9-2 record. But I saw the Little Sisters of the Poor. They beat with Cleveland, with the Lions, with the Houston Texans.
Now, Paul, that's what I saw.
And the Cincinnati Bengals. That's what I saw.
But, Paul, now let's look at this honestly and say this. I mean, absolutely positively, you know, without question, again, the Patriots come out and they play a great game, and there's absolutely positively, like, no, we're not going to debate that, Paul. They played a great game, but is this really, I mean, honestly, Paul, this is really the New York Jets team that you think is, that's the real Jets team? They played a horrible game. They played a horrible game.
And it happens. Those things happen. I mean, that's just the nature of this game. Things happen like that. But this was a big football game. This was essentially for supremacy in the AFC East, and even possibly home field advantage throughout the playoffs. So this was a big football game. and you know,
but what it shows
everybody seems to forget this. Last year, the New York Jets. They left their way into the playoffs. They beat the Indianapolis Colts team that Peyton Manning sent out the second half. They beat a Cincinnati Bengals team that basically played the game as it was a preseason game. So they won two preseason games at the end of the year. And they backed their way into, they got their way into the playoffs, and then they surprised some people, and they won some games, and they got to the AFC title game. But there's some flaws here. And mainly, the biggest flaw to me is Mark Sanchez. I've said it all year long. I said it in the beginning of the year, and I'll say it to you now here in December. Because December is where championships are won and where a team starts to separate themselves and start making their playoff run. This is big. This is the big month of December. But anyway, I said here that New England Patriots were the best team in the AFC East. And I said here at the beginning of the year, back in August, that the New England Patriots would win the AFC East. And it's not over yet, but as of right now, how do you like me now? How do you like me now?
Well, congratulations, Paul. I mean, you're out there. You're certainly, you enjoy, just like you did, you know, enjoy touting Donovan McNabb and how great Donovan McNabb was going to be. I think
that was perfect,
Paul. But I think if you look at this, if I'm the Patriots and I think, like you're going to think, that Rex Ryan isn't going to clean this up, then I caution you. They're a better coach team than what they played. But I think, and I'll give you credit where credit is due. I think you are a firm believer of the Patriots this year. I'm not. I think ultimately, Paul, I have to admit, I am amazed at how this team is able to play as well as they do, considering I don't think they have that much talent offensively. I think defensively, to be as young as they are and to be as strong as that unit is, it's surprising, yes, but is it unfounded? No, I mean, they have talented players on the defensive side of the ball. I mean, Jared Mayo projected to be a great player, and it looks like they're right. But offensively, to sit around and say Deion Branch was going to come back into that organization at that time and fill that void, I didn't hear you predicting that. And I'm just surprised.
Go ahead.
I'm telling you, Paul, I watched that game. I have to admit, I was beyond outraged in terms of the score, but I was a little bit amazed. I just think that team, they are, there's like something in the water. I don't mean to say they're talentless on offense. I mean, Tom Brady is a great quarterback. Deion Branch is a veteran wide receiver. He's respectable in this league, and Wes Welker is still Wes Welker, but I don't see it. Call me crazy. I'm being honest, Paul. I think that team, especially the Jets defense, they should have dominated the Patriot offense. I'm not saying they should have won the game. 45-3, Paul. I mean, that offense looked like they were the St. Louis Rams with Kurt Warner and Marshall Faulk.
But let's talk about Tom Brady for a second. This is a guy that throughout his career has done it with not the greatest wide receivers in the game. He's done it with the likes of a Troy Brown. He's done it with the likes of a David Patton. I mean, he's done it with Deion Branch. So he's done it with not the greatest of weapons. I mean, you figure Randy Moss is probably his best wide receiver that he's had during his era with the New England Patriots. And also was playing well for them, Danny Woodhead, a guy that the Jets cut in training camp. So Danny Woodhead, a guy that the Jets felt couldn't help them, is helping the New England Patriots do their thing on the offensive side of football. And you look at it now, they're 7-1. Without Randy Moss, and Tom Brady, again, is just playing off the charts. The guy is playing off the charts. And they're doing it with Tom Brady. They're doing it with Deion Branch. It's almost like a team effort here. Of course, you have Wes Welker back, who's a top-notch wide receiver. They're doing it with these guys, and Tom Brady's been doing it since he's been Tom Brady, and since he's been with the Patriots throughout his career with minimal talent. He's been doing this.
But when you look at, and I'm being honest, if you look at the Jet offense and you look at the Patriot offense, I'm telling you, almost position for position, you have to, except for the quarterback, you have to sit there and say the Jets are, I'd say, marginally stronger.
I mean, you want to go down the list, Paul? 45-3 tells me otherwise. But
stop.
It tells me otherwise. But the numbers don't lie. I mean, I guess we can manipulate numbers and make them say anything that we want them to say. But numbers don't lie in a lot of ways.
So you're saying that 45-3, numbers don't lie. Mm-hmm. So the Jet offense versus the Patriot offense is, let's see, 45 goes in 15 times, Paul. They're 15 times better than the... numbers don't lie, Mr. Irrational. Mr. Let's Make a Song, when a player leaves, who, and now you're Michael Vick's, you're Michael Vick's son.
45-3 is 45-3. I mean,
you come into production production meetings begging me to let you talk about Michael Vick for MVP, Paul. I mean, this is the same minute you wrote a song. There was thoughts of restraining orders against you with Donovan McNabb in the offseason.
Well, again, I was a guy who thought Donovan McNabb.
Didn't your counselor tell you, Paul, that one man should not be more important than your wife?
If I knew what I know now, and I think if anybody knew that, obviously, Save McNabb, the song
didn't
may have not been
Paul,
written.
I mean, didn't
probably
we
would
tell
not have
you
been written.
That you should
it
be writing songs
would not
about your
have
wife?
Been written. It probably would not have been written. But, you know,
Save McNabb, everybody! Save McNabb!
I guess, I mean, it would not have been written if I knew that Michael Pink.
This is your resident, not from the South, Mom's a Little Donna, kickstarting your weekend every Friday with Ladies First Radio of the J-Rouse Show, a show for women, by women. Tune in every Friday, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. as my co-host Princess Odelia and I discuss everyday issues and offer inspirational solutions. From the East Coast to the West Coast to all over the world, Ladies First Radio keeps it real, spreading positivity one show at a time. So come be uplifted with Ladies First Radio, the J-Rouse Show, every Friday, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's Ladies First Radio, the J-Rouse Show, a show for women by women.
Technical difficulties here. Well, how we have technical difficulties with this song on?
Those arguments could be made for those teams. legitimate arguments.
You say legitimate. I mean, I don't know if I'm going that far.
I mean, the Steelers, obviously, with Ben Roethlisberger, and I'm a little concerned about Ben and his foot. He didn't seem like he was getting around very well. But the Steelers, with that defense, and if Ben Roethlisberger can regain some level of health, they're a legitimate team. Obviously, the Patriots are a legit team. And the New York Jets, with their defense, are a legitimate team as well. And lastly, the Baltimore Ravens, with their defense, and Joe Flacco, who is a decent quarterback. Those are four legitimate teams and four teams that you can make arguments that could be in that, you know, you could say that you can make legitimate arguments that one of those four teams could be in the Super Bowl. You could make those arguments, legitimate arguments. And if I'm any of those teams, I'm rooting for the Kansas City Chiefs to win the division in the West, and I'm rooting for the Chargers to stay home. And I'm also rooting for the Colts to stay home as well. But if you look at the Colts, the way they're playing, there's a good possibility that they may just stay home. There's a very good possibility that they may stay home. Because the way Peyton Manning's played, I mean, 11 interceptions in the last four games, I mean, he's not playing very well. And he's throwing the football around like we've never seen before. He's throwing the football around. And he's throwing it up for grabs for everybody.
No, stop it, Paul. I mean, he's getting a lot of pressure. He's got no core receiver. For the first time in a long time,
Reggie Wayne, Pierre Garçon, those are some good wide receivers. Reggie Wayne is a Pro Bowl wideout. So there are weapons there. Why can't you just say Peyton Manning is not playing good football?
Paul, he's not. If you let me get there,
I mean, 11 interceptions in the last 3 weeks.
I say this about a guy like Peyton Manning. I think it's impossible. To say a guy like Peyton Manning, it's not all Peyton Manning. Pierre Garçon, last time I checked, Paul, has been in the league 2 years. I'm not going to put him on a Marvin Harrison or a Reggie Wayne status yet. I mean, they're missing some big pieces.
He's a decent wide receiver. I'm not saying they're not missing big pieces because they are obviously missing big pieces. But what I'm saying is we can criticize Peyton Manning. It is okay to criticize Peyton Manning. And I heard Deion and those boys talk, Deion Sanders talking about it on this Sunday, talking about is saying that it is okay to criticize Peyton Manning. And it is okay to criticize Peyton Manning. I mean, this guy's had a great career. The guy's a great quarterback. But he's not playing well. 11 interceptions in the last 3 weeks. That's not good. That's not good.
Paul, I don't think I'm saying he is pressuring himself, I mean, to make the play, which is a problem. Which, again, that takes Peyton Manning back to, I mean, his first couple seasons in the league when he was trying to live off of his abilities rather than the Peyton Manning we've seen lately that doesn't press and make, I mean, quite a few stupid plays. But I'm out there looking at that team as a whole. They have no running game. He's missing his arguably next to and one could say Dallas Clark is their biggest weapon because of what he does for Reggie Wayne. I mean,
Reggie Wayne is their biggest weapon.
When you miss the guy who can open up the middle of your field, you have to recognize that your wide receiver, who's now running, I mean, basically he's just pressing A and praying. I mean, come on, Paul. We all own Madden as kids. Reggie Wayne is out there to kid a 30, 40. He's turned 20 into 40 and 40 into a touchdown. So, yeah, when you miss Dallas Clark, forget about Reggie Wayne because they're just going to cover to him and say goodnight to him. And statistically, that's what's happened. When you have no running game, what do you think teams are going to do to Peyton Manning? They've made him look ordinary.
It sounds like you're making excuses for the guy.
Well, you know what, Paul? I could tell you what. I like that Peyton Manning.
I
think there's plenty of teams in this league to say. Paul, you want to make this comparison to Peyton Manning. Like, see, I like to look at Peyton Manning or a guy like Tom Brady. I mean, but for Tom Brady, they arguably have had he's had at least a semblance of a running game throughout the season. He has a very athletic, although albeit young, tight end. I mean, and he has they're four average receivers deep, Paul. Where's the Colt offense?
But again, you're making excuses. It's inexcusable. 11 interceptions in the last 3 weeks. It's inexcusable. Injuries. I hear you. I hear everything that you're saying. But there's no way that you can excuse 11 interceptions in the last 3 weeks. I don't know how you can excuse that. I don't care if you have Jim Smith and Joe Johnson and Jack Jones as your three wide receivers, and Charlie Brown as your tight end. You're Peyton Manning. You're a Hall of Fame quarterback. 11 interceptions in 3 weeks is not acceptable. It's not. It's unacceptable. It's unacceptable. And somehow, some way, you're finding a way to defend this guy. You have any other evidence to defend your boy Peyton Manning?
Well, Paul, I mean, I'm going to go back and I'm going to say this. It's A, been an awkward year in the NFL, and B, it's not about defending him. I still say, look at the people, look at everything around him. How many drop balls has that team had? I'm going to say this, because I really have come to see, like, when you look at a Tom Brady and you look at a Peyton Manning, this year literally could have gone either way for both of them. I honestly see, I mean, except for the fact that there's been significant injuries on the Colts team, and then, of course, their record goes downhill. I mean, what happens when or if, Wes Welker doesn't make it back to this season? I mean, are the Patriots really – they're the team. You can definitely see they're the team this year in the NFL. They struck lightning in a bottle. There's not much talent, and they're doing very well.
But Tom Brady has done it with less. Tom Brady has done it with less. And you don't see him throwing the football around like that. He's done it with less.
Less than what? Less than what, Paul?
Less
than the Colts?
He's done it with
Paul, you're
less. You look at the 2001 New England Patriots. And then tell me they're starting wide out.
Well, it was Dion Branch and the other scrub.
You had David Patton and Troy Brown.
But Paul, here's the problem.
David Patton. David Patton and Troy Brown.
And the Branch, they always were in a three wide receiver set, no fullback, and a tailback or a running back. But so when you look at what they did, they're spreading out the offense, and they had two. I mean, Patton wasn't remarkable, let's quote unquote say remarkable wide receiver. They have two possession receivers who were very sure-handed. And they made a living in a West Coast offense that was designed for a guy in Tom Brady who, coming out of college, has said the guy can't throw the ball deep until he gets Randy Moss, and he still doesn't really throw the ball deep to Randy Moss. I mean, if you call 35-yard pass deep, then that's great. What he does well is he throws a really good 10-yard out, and that's what that offense – Paul, they put a guy in an offense to succeed.
But let's look at the Patriots' start wide receivers: Troy Brown, Charles Johnson, David Patton. I mean, Jermaine Wiggins as their tight end, running back Antoine Smith, Kevin Falk. I mean, you're not talking about top-notch offensive players here. And this guy found a way to get them to the Super Bowl, and ultimately to win the Super Bowl. So you can't – I mean, I understand what you're saying, but there is no way that you can defend 11 interceptions in 3 weeks. And
Paul, I guess maybe you don't get it. I slept the same amount.
I
slept the same amount. I'm – no, I could honestly care less. I mean, let's keep it real. I have no affiliations, no ties with Peyton Manning, and or you know, I'm an Eagles fan, but I'm going to say this for any
are
for anybody. Well, you know me, Paul. I'm shifty. I'll be out in the West Coast one day, and the East Coast the next. According to you, who was I a couple months ago? I was San Fran. Yes,
you were Bay Area.
How could I forget? You know, but I look at this and I say, if I'm the Colts organization. Yeah, am I going to start to sit down with Peyton Manning on the regular and maybe remind him that there is such a thing as a throw out of bounds? And, yeah, I mean, maybe let's look at the defense. Let's try to see what our defense can do instead of throwing, you know, forcing these passes. But at the end of the day, I actually don't blame Peyton Manning for trying to make a play. On a team that is really – Paul, they're not – are they – Paul, let's be honest. Is this Colts ball club, are they a contender or a pretender?
I don't care what they are, contender, pretender, but you cannot sit here and defend four interceptions against the Cowboys.
So you're saying, Paul, you're going on record and saying
it. Well, I don't understand why you're trying to defend this. This doesn't make any sense to me.
Here's why. I got to ask you something. You're going on the record basically now, from what I'm getting from this conversation, and I'm going to now be accused of twisting people's words because that's what Jeremy does well. But basically, from what I hear from you, is the Colt organization needs to draft a successor and bench Peyton Manning.
That's not what I'm saying.
Paul, because you're saying 11 interceptions is so inexcusable. They should be cutting this player. Maybe they should do what the Redskins did, Paul. Maybe they should do what the Redskins did, and they should suspend him for the final four games as conduct detrimental to the team because he threw 11 interceptions in the last four games.
His play has been detrimental to his team. I mean, his play has been detrimental to his team. So, yes, maybe we should do something about that. But I will say this. There is no way on this beautiful earth that we live on that you can sit here and try to defend 11 interceptions in 3 weeks. Again, I don't care who was in there. I don't care if he has any wide receivers. I don't care if he has one right wide receiver. And that's the only wide receiver that's going to throw around all the time. You have to protect the football, even more so with all the injuries that you have around you. 11 interceptions.
Again, Paul,
11 interceptions in 3 weeks is inexcusable.
So, and as you said,
if you want to find a way to defend that and excuse that type of play, then you can go ahead and do it. But I will not. You can if you like, but I will not.
No, what you're going to do is you're ready to move on from the Peyton Manning era. He's washed up, you know, hag. He's had four bad games, in one season. It's time to draft and bench contract. I told you, suspend him. Don't even pay him. Contract detrimental to the team. There you go. Bang.
Well, we'll save this discussion until later. But we're now being joined by VH1's Football Wives star and wife of Deion Sanders, Pilar Sanders.
Hi, how are you?
Pilar, how are you?
I'm good. I'm very good, thank you.
Now,
how are you doing?
Pilar, I'm doing great. And you sound very well.
I am, thank you.
Now, Pilar, we want to go and talk about the show now, Football Wives, which airs on VH1. 9:30 Eastern Standard Time, 8:30 Central, each and every Sunday. Now, how did you go about getting on this show?
Well, it was proposed to me. And actually, the concept of the show was to have women and kind of promote women empowerment. That's the show I was sold.
And,
did it come with a money back guarantee?
I guess it should have.
But do you think that the show does that?
Absolutely not. It, you know, actually, it would have to be something that you're really looking for and searching for. But again, that was one of the things that my husband was very well aware of. He did not at all want me to do the show whatsoever. But of course, he ended up supporting it because it was something that I really wanted to do. I wanted to have the chance to work with women. And of course, we had our show, Deanna Pilar, Primetime Love, on the Oxygen Network, and it was a family show. So a lot of our supporters and fans really wanted to see me interact more with my friends or with women and stuff like that. So when the idea of Football Wives came about, I definitely saw that as an opportunity, you know, to work with other strong women and have a chance to display that type of relationship. I only knew one of the women before I signed on to the show and met the others while I was filming. So it was very interesting, to say the least.
And you talked about your show that you had with your husband, Deion Sanders. And it was a fairly successful show. Will that show come back at some point?
Well, a lot of supporters and fans really, really wanted to. The only reason we didn't renew for a second season was that they wanted it to extend to an hour instead of a half an hour show. And that's what they seem to be doing with a lot of reality shows. And we just wanted to keep it nice, sweet, and simple. There was hundreds of hours that we already filmed and taped to get the 30-minute, actually a 22-minute show. And we just wanted to keep it there. So we decided not to renew. But, you know, I don't know. It's been on the table for quite some time, and it's basically on that teeter-totter where it could go. It could definitely come back.
You know, one of the questions, it's interesting from my perspective, I think with you and your husband getting involved in a show, were you aware of ahead of time the cast or, you know, the wives of other players? Because I think you should have brought, I felt like, not just a different audience, but a different almost appeal coming from being married to Deion Sanders, who was so well known. I it's almost as if, like, it was a mishmash of cast members because they didn't really project well in their totality.
Well, again, no, I was not aware of the cast prior to signing onto the show at all. It was no surprise. And, you know, it kind of all, anything really could have happened. There was a lot of great film that was shot and a lot of stuff that just hit the threshing floor. It just didn't make the cut, apparently. I see the show when everyone else sees the show, so a lot of the times I'm very surprised at some of what they put together.
And how did you and Deion Sanders meet?
We met when we were both acting.
Okay.
So we were in L.A. and we were both on the acting scene, and we met and went kind of toe-to-toe. He's very, very quick on his toes, and that struck me. And he knew how to banter well, so that was always good.
And it definitely shows on TV, as he does TV for the NFL Network. I always wonder how a guy like Deion Sanders would approach a woman.
It really wasn't, he really didn't come to me with lines, though he might say he was practicing for a movie role. But he was pretty much himself. It wasn't like he was shooting come on lines to me at all. And we befriended each other for a while before it, you know, before he snatched my heart like that, so.
Right.
Yeah.
Now on the show, Pilar, fair or unfair, in a lot of ways, you play the villain role. And
I don't play the villain role. I don't play the villain role. I don't, not at all. I guess it's just the type of music they put underneath me and the looks that they choose to gather, which sometimes it's not even in the same scene. So it's not, I really don't play a villain role. I'm not a...
You know what, do you, it's interesting, you said you watch the show when the viewers are watching the show. I mean, have you gotten to a point where, it seems like you've been a good sport about it. Like, do you laugh at, like you said at one point, what the actual scene really was, and then the what might be a five-second snapshot of what we see that's put together? Are you laughing at it now?
Well, you definitely have to have good humor about it all. I guess the one thing that is most sensitive to me is that when my children watch it and all of the children that we mentor, and I have to sit and, you know, really explain to them, okay, this is the good thing and the positive things you guys should take from the show. The other things just let fall by the wayside and don't pay any attention to that stuff. But, I mean, everything has to be in good humor. It makes no sense to get upset. It, you know, spilt milk, it's washed, it's filmed, it's done. It's out there. I actually find it quite humorous that I would be portrayed in a villainous role. I think it's rather exciting because that's not my personality at all. So it kind of gives me a chance to live and walk in another shoes.
Well, but has it given you maybe the ability to also, I mean, with your faith and your husband's faith being strong, has it given you the ability to springboard and say, you know what, in life, you know, sometimes people are going to test your faith, but here's a real life example, of one's ability to know who they are in the face of some adversity. That just so happens to be on national TV Sundays at 9:30.
That's true. I mean, how I really looked at it was not easy to film every single day, honestly. It really wasn't. I see 100% more than what you guys actually see on TV, so it wasn't an easy thing. But how often do we get to choose our coworkers? And that's really the kind of thing that kept me going, just to be that person or that example for women and men, young girls who are your coworkers in life. So what do you do? Do you give up? Do you quit your job? Absolutely not. You have to deal with it the best way you can while not losing yourself and understanding who you are and whose you are and what you stand for, what you believe in. So this is my attitude. This is how I walk every day. This is how I teach our kids. So in knowing that, I couldn't back down or stand down or take any other route.
And Pilar, every time I seem to turn around, the girls always seem to have an issue with what you're doing. And
that's the key. That's the key thing right there. They had issues, not I didn't have an issue. Yeah, they had issues. They still have them.
One incident was the situation with Amanda Davis, the wife of Leonard Davis, where you had a previous engagement, you kind of stepped out early on her Bible study. It was a three-hour Bible study. I was gathered when watching the show. The preacher talked about saying that it was going to be a three-hour Bible study. But talk about that situation, and do you think you were unfairly criticized?
Well, and to give you the realness of the entire situation, when I was invited, it was an hour prior to the show. And I'm sorry, an hour prior to the Bible study. So in lieu of that, I allowed Milani to know that, hey, I'm not going to be sitting at your guys' Bible study. I'll go there to meet you, to meet the other gals that I hadn't met before. But I have a movie premiere to go to, and that's pretty much it. I did not go to her home to go to the Bible study. I went to meet the girls. So that was a misperception right there.
Okay.
And then just knowing what it is, I'm well fed at the Potter's House with Bishop T.D. Jakes and Bishop Cheryl Brady, and I'm really good with Bible study and God and my relationship with Him. So I don't let just anyone speak into my spirit. I'm so picky about who does my hair, who does my nails, who does my makeup. So how much more would I be concerned about who speaks in my spirit? So I don't just go anywhere for Bible study or to church. So just knowing that, knowing me, that definitely wasn't a reason why I went to the home.
And so your intent, basically what you're saying is, it was not for the Bible study, but it was for mainly to meet the girls.
It definitely was. Yeah, and they knew it. They knew it. Not only did they know it, but an hour before me going, they also knew that I was going to the movie premiere.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe a woman, her name is Sherilyn, who orchestrated the premieres in Dallas, was on a radio show that I did, and she told me what happened, where they actually had to pull two rows of seats because the cast and crew were going to the movie premiere as well. So it's one thing to have it cut, but it's another thing when you have your cast members on the show actually saying how rude it was and how they didn't know when they were really supposed to be a part of going to the movie premiere because they held up the red carpet for all of us to be there. So that kind of got underneath my skin a little bit.
And you've also had, you ran into another situation with Janita Foster, the wife of George Foster, former offensive lineman for the Denver Broncos. It was a situation where she collapsed. She was taken to the hospital. She suffered from dehydration. And there was a big issue because apparently you did not go to the hospital to see her. What's the story here? What really happened?
I didn't know her. She's not a friend of mine. She wasn't a friend of mine. I didn't know her before the show. Why would I do that?
But you know what?
Yeah,
it's almost a better answer. It's almost a better answer, Pilar. You say, you know what? We had two a days. Take a day from your husband, and you know.
Whatever. I mean, whatever would sound good to someone wouldn't sound great to another person. So to me, that really doesn't matter. I'm about the truth, and the truth is that I don't know you. She wasn't a friend of mine. So, you know, you're in the hospital, okay? You're taking monsters, drinking monsters, doing diet pills. You don't drink water. I mean, what would one expect? First it was an aneurysm, and then there's nothing wrong with you. I don't know. Aside from that fact, what can I do? You're in the hospital. You have six other women there with you. They can't even stay with you. What can I do? I'm not a doctor. Me holding your hand is not going to do any good.
did you try to contact her?
I did try to contact her. I didn't receive any word back. And by that time, I heard word that she was home and nothing was wrong with her. So, you know, that was good.
And another issue, you had an issue with Dawn Neufeld, the wife of Ryan Neufeld. Let's start with the incident with the boat. It all started with Amanda Davis talking about the hospital situation with Janita and everything. What is your take on that whole situation on the boat with Dawn?
You have to understand the type of personalities you deal with and that you're around. Understanding that, you know, bitterness comes from somewhere, issues that women may have, it doesn't start with me and it won't end with me. So I just probably was a byproduct in that situation where she needed to release something. And
right.
Obviously it wasn't in the best fashion or in a very mature fashion. And I've said once before, and I'll say it again, how better are we as parents when we try to teach our children what to do and what not to do, yet we in turn act out worse than they would. So, I mean, I really have no respect for those type of actions. You're not going to garnish my emotions with that whatsoever. So, I mean, it's a sad situation that she was in.
Now, it seemed like on the boat you were kind of off to yourself while all the other girls were kind of socializing with one another. Is there any particular reason why you kind of set yourself apart away from the girls?
No, that was never a case at all. Again, I didn't know any but one of the girls prior to filming at all. So they were friends. They knew each other. That's nature. That's all. Yeah.
Now we're talking to Pilar Sanders, wife of Deion Sanders and star, Football Wives with Jairz on VH1. each and every Sunday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 8:30 Central. Now, you and Dion are very successful. Dion had a very successful NFL career, very lucrative NFL career. You did the modeling thing. You did the acting thing. So there's a lot of money there with you guys. Do you think that possibly there is a jealousy issue going on with the other girls? Or why do you think the other girls just don't get along with you?
You know, I don't know. I can't speak for how they think or what, in fact, they feel. So in terms of whether there's jealousy or not, I really wouldn't know. I guess you'll be able to see or judge for yourself from the show and what you see.
Right. And I guess if it is jealousy, I guess on some level it may be understandable, but I mean, I don't know. I don't know. And watching the show, I'm really not too sure, but it seems like a lot of the cast members do have an issue with you for whatever reason, fair or unfair, for whatever reason.
Well, but I think, and Paul, I mean, I'm not going to speak on PLR's behalf, but I think it and I'm sure you and your husband and your family have come across this many times. It's difficult.
Well,
it puts yourself in a difficult position because you're constantly, when you sit at the head of the class and you're very well known, you're a target, period. And it takes a special person or special people to recognize that, you know, people know who you are. They're gunning for. They want to be on camera with a recognizable face because it allows them. It's a springboard for them. You and your husband,
well, I mean,
your name.
Yeah. That I mean, yeah, that's for sure. Prior to that, I didn't. I mean, would you have recognized any of the names prior to the show? You know, I understand that, but as far as calling out why the women act the way they do, I really have no explanation for that. I don't sit personally and talk about another family's financial situations or their marital problems, yay or nay, or their families. That's not what we do. And as a couple, as a woman, as a mother, I don't sit and try to judge what people should or should not do with their money or their finances or the platform that they have. So, yeah, we don't surround ourselves with people who do that. So it was a very different situation for me to be in that type of environment because I'm not normally around personalities or characters like that.
And so at the end of the day, these are not the women that you would call up and hang out with or go to the mall with, pretty much.
Well, you know,
100%
with them. Did you say that?
Let me answer that.
Well, not yet. Be presidential. Not yet.
Well, and one of the cast members, Dawn Neufeld, I guess she threw a little olive branch to you and offered.
What kind
of
olive? No, an olive branch with thorns. If someone really extended an olive branch, if they were rejected at the first sign of it, would you really cross the person again and spit out profanity? Absolutely not. Then it wasn't a real olive branch, was it? I mean, it's funny because you can't always just take for Bible what a person just says just because it may sound good. Well, what is really extending an olive branch? It's really having peace within yourself. It's really understanding who you are and not trying to change a person. I didn't try to change one of those ladies on the show. I accepted them for who they were and who they absolutely are right now. And I'm okay with that because I'm okay with me.
And the question is, she gave you an invitation to come to her house. Have you ever taken her up on that offer?
Why would I do that?
Or will you?
Absolutely not. Like I said on the show, absolutely not. I would be a fool. No.
Okay, fair enough.
No, not at all. If someone tells you
how they feel and who they are with their words, I always say listen to what they say because they're not lying. Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. So on the boat, and you, of course you guys only heard part of it, she just ran into a wild forest of profanity and just proceeded to tell me all her intimate thoughts about me, which were not positive at all. So why in turn would I find myself at her home? That would be
right.
Very foolish. No,
Pilar, I've been reading reports that if the show does come back next year, that you will not be a part of it. Is there any truth to that?
I don't even
know if there's any truth to
the show coming back at all.
We have to first
jump that hurdle.
But if it does overcome that hurdle, at this point, you're really not too sure?
I don't know. I'm not even sure if the show would even return.
Right. Now, you and Deion Sanders, you guys do a lot of charitable works. Talk about some of them.
Actually, we are in Orlando and Kissimmee, Florida right now with over 100 of our Primetime Association Truth football team. We're competing in the American Youth Football League for nationals right now. We've been here for about a week, and it's part of our 501c3. We have an 8-week camp in the summer. It's athletics and academics. Our children get over an hour and a half of tutoring and study hall every single day in the summer, and of course when we go on trips. Every single year we play at the Super Bowl. We visit a major university as well as an NFL team. Where this year we were able to see the Falcons go to their training camp. The kids were able to sit and talk with all of the team members there. Had an absolutely wonderful time. Our lives are centered around kids and families. We help people and families all of the time. Another one is Sanders Claus, where we bridge together corporations and communities, just answering the wishes and needs of anyone, men, women, children, families in need, period, whether it's a home that they need to be built, that they need building, or just furnishing their home, stocking the refrigerator, taking them on shopping sprees, providing prom dresses, a prosthetic leg, power wheelchairs, whatever it is. I mean, this is our life. This is what we do. So
right.
We really enjoy it. We wouldn't have it any other way. And, you know, unfortunately, the Football Wives crew did film some, but not everything. And most unfortunately, you probably won't be able to see next to anything of it on the show. So,
and I guess that is
unfortunate. It's most unfortunate. But you can find out more information about our sports league at ptasports.org and, of course, about our Sanders Claus at sandersclaus.org. So we always Twitter about everything we do, and I'm on Twitter under my own name, Pilar Sanders. My husband's on Twitter under his name, Deion Sanders, and I Facebook. So we always talk about, you know, what we do during and throughout the entire year. It's 365 days of just activity all the time. And it's exciting, and it's very rewarding. So.
You guys have to deserve a round of applause for your charitable efforts in the community, because it's definitely needed, and you guys are definitely doing a good job with that. So I definitely give you a lot of credit for that.
We don't do it for that, but thank you.
But what's next for Pilar Sanders?
Ooh, that's a loaded question there. Well, I am in the midst of launching the first release out of my fragrance line, and it's called Shalamai. It's named after our baby daughter. And it's very, very light, but it's very sweet, and it's very long-lasting. So I'm extraordinarily excited about that. I'm also in a VH1 movie.
which is called Single Ladies, and it just got picked up as a series on VH1 as well. So I'm excited about that. And what we do, our holiday season, Christmas is coming up. We just ended our Thanksgiving season, obviously, with Santa's Claus. So we have a lot in store for Christmas. Every single week we do some type of giveaways, thousands and thousands of bicycles, of clothes, of toiletries, of food, every single week around the Dallas Metroplex so far. So we have a lot in store. So you got to keep up. You got to follow me some kind of way. Log on my website.
And that is PilarSanders.com, correct?
Yes. Yes, it is. Definitely.
Now, Pilar, we want to thank you for stopping by. We greatly appreciate it. And again, you can see Pilar and the rest of the Football Wives each and every Sunday on VH1, 9:30 Eastern Time, 8:30 Central Time. And it's an entertaining show, and we definitely thank Pilar Sanders for stopping by.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. God bless.
You too. Take care.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
Pilar Sanders, wife of Dion, and now star of Football Wives. We have another Football Wives coming in the next couple minutes. Dawn Neufeld, excuse me. And she wants to set the record straight. And we'll definitely get her thoughts on what she heard there and everything in general. But I mean, I guess it's an interesting dynamic. And, you know, you have a lot of different personalities, a lot of different egos, and any time that comes together, and not to sound sexist or anything, but especially with women who at times can be catty and at times can do certain things and act a certain way. So it's very...
But you're not sounding sexist, right, Paul? We want to set that
record straight. But at any time, I mean, any woman will tell you it can be hard getting along with other women. I mean, my wife tells me all the time that, you know, she gets along better with men than women. So, I mean, it's understandable.
Maybe you got a problem there, Paul.
Maybe. I hope not. I don't think so. I hope that's not one of my 99 problems, because we all have 99 problems. But hopefully that's not one of my 99 problems. But,
all right, move on.
And speaking of moving on, we are now being joined by the wife of Ryan Neufeld and another star of Football Wives, Dawn Neufeld. Dawn, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Doing well. Great to have you.
We're interested, Dawn. We're interested.
I was at a meeting this evening for a charity I'm associated with, and I'm glad we got out early because I was really hoping to see what my predecessor had to say. And if you guys want to get real, we can talk about what really happened while we were shooting Football Wives.
Well, let's get real.
What really happened? Let's go. We'll start with the boat. What happened there?
Let's start with the boat. It was very interesting to listen to what Pilar had to say about that. You know, that boat scene, we were probably about a good 3 months into shooting. We'd been shooting we shot the show over a course of almost 4 months. So you figure we're 3 months into shooting, and she said she wasn't standoffish, that she didn't know any of us. Well, we've been shooting for 3 months, so wouldn't you get on the boat and at least try to have a good time? I mean, the rest of us did. You know, to hear her say it's just shocking to me. I was sitting here going, really? No, she really sat in that corner and got on the phone. At one point, we were taking pictures, and I asked her to come get in the picture. You know, regardless of how she and I feel about each other, this was a chapter of our lives that I want to remember, and we're all part of this cast. And I asked her to come get in the picture at one point. She was like, no, I don't think so. And I said, no, really, Pilar, can you please just come get in the picture? And so she actually came and got into the picture at that point. So that's kind of what we were dealing with. And, you know, over the course of that 3 months, we did have some, you know, negative interactions. When we started out shooting the show, you know, she keeps saying we all had daggers in her back from the beginning. That's not the case. We actually had some really good interactions early on, and I think just as everyone got to know each other, we didn't like each other, and I think it played out on that boat that day. I was very frustrated with her, not with anything else going on my life. In my life, I was frustrated with her, and I had really just had enough at that point.
But isn't that, in a way, I mean, and I guess, in all fairness, essentially VH1, I mean, isn't that a risk everyone takes when you get on a show that you don't know other reality cast members, that not everyone, and maybe not a lot of people, are going to get along?
I'm sorry. We all watch Basketball Wives. We weren't getting on this show to kumbaya with everyone. It's a reality show. There has to be drama. So if she thought
right.
we were all going to get on this show and be friends and everything was going to be happy, you know, whose reality is that? It's a reality show. There has to be conflict or no one's going to watch.
And let's go to the horseback riding now. She invited you guys out and
can we talk about one little issue on the boat real quick? Because, you know, she likes to bring up the fact that I was using profanity. Like, that's a horrible thing. I know a lot of people that cuss, okay? I think our president admitted in his interview with Barbara Walters a couple weeks ago that he uses profanity. So, you know, I guess I'm in good company because I cuss. But you don't see me cussing on the show just for the sake of cussing. I mean, I was really mad, and I wanted to let her know that. So let's talk about horseback riding. I sat there, and I was not going to say anything about the boat. And she started in on me. And I think people should realize I'm not going to sit there and just take it.
Paul, it's interesting, Dawn, that you mentioned that. I mean, Paul and I have been friends for almost 30 years. I'm an avid cursor. Paul doesn't curse at all. And I can't say I disagree with you on that, in that if someone provokes another person, then they should certainly be willing to deal with the consequence of provoking someone. If you're provoked to a point and they don't know you that well, then they just deal with the consequences.
Well, and let's talk about that, because, you know, I hate this whole victim role that Pilar has played as the show's been playing out, and we're seeing how things are being portrayed. You know, on that boat that day, she kept calling me sweetie. Look, I got 2 degrees on my wall, one from UCLA undergrad, one from UC Davis School of Law. You know, if you want to call me the B word, that's fine. I'll own that. But don't call me sweetie when you're trying to, you know, degrade me. She was talking down to me like I was beneath her. So I'm going to let you know how I feel about you if you're going to keep calling me sweetie. And, you know, that we had a couple incidents leading up to that. You know, one of the things she doesn't talk about is this crew we worked with for 4 months. She made them use her pool house. She's admitted to having 17 bathrooms in her home, but she made these people that we worked with for 4 months, who in essence became family. They were in my house playing with my kids. You know, we broke bread together. She made them use the bathrooms in her pool house. And anytime someone's asked her about it, I mean, you know, what I've heard her say is that she doesn't let just anyone into her home to disrespect her home. These were not strangers off the street. These were people we worked with, who we still keep in touch with. And that was kind of one of those incidents leading up to the boat. We went out to dinner one night, and you don't get to see this on the show. She kept saying to me, "You're so skinny." Okay, call me skinny. I work out and I take care of myself, but it was not in a "you're so skinny and you look great," you know, sort of tone. It was "you're so skinny and you need to eat." And I'm like, okay, she kept getting those jabs in, and I had just had enough.
First of all, two things, Dawn. No, Paul, I got to get this in. This is important. First of all, two things. You look skinny, and you're skinny, you look great. And number two, and this is a little bit of a pointed question, it seems like from what you're saying, one of the things that may be bothering you is the fact that, I mean, as you mentioned, you're an extremely credentialed individual. You have a law degree. You come onto a show, and it's almost as if you feel as though you've been a little bit disrespected, because here's an individual who has status, but maybe without the quote-unquote credentials to deserve that status. and it may have kind of gotten under your skin a little bit to be, a second tier. But essentially, I mean, you don't deserve to be on a second tier in your mind.
Well, let's be real about it, okay? Because I hear the word jealous getting thrown around a lot. A lot of people have said that we're jealous of Pilar's money or because she's pretty. I'm a football wife. I've been around a lot of pretty women with a lot of money. And if I spend my time being jealous of those women, I would have a really sad, miserable life. And let's talk about the money. If it's the money I'm jealous about, look at Amanda Davis on our show. Okay, she and Leonard, they got real money. They got, like, big money with, like, 30 Smashburger franchise money. And we're great friends. So if it's a money issue, wouldn't I be hating on Amanda? Right? So my whole thing was, I don't care who you're married to. I've been around a lot of people throughout my life. I worked for Holly Robinson Pete and Rodney Pete when I was in college. I was around celebrities all the time. I just don't like the way she treated people like they were beneath her because she was married to Dion. I can deal with everything else. Don't treat people like they're beneath you. And that's the problem I had. Think about the situation with Shanita going to the hospital. I'll say it right here. I wouldn't have expected her to go to the hospital. I certainly wouldn't have expected her to go over to Shanita's house because, like she said, they weren't friends. But even in listening to her speak tonight on your show, it didn't even sound to me like it was worth her caring about. And as far as I understand, she did not call Shanita afterwards to check on her and see how she was doing.
Now, it seems to be a lot of conflict with Pilar. Does any of you girls get along with Pilar?
None of us have spoken to her since we wrapped. And, you know, she keeps saying all of us have a problem and it's not her. At what point in time do the rest of us get along and she's the odd man out? I mean, at what point in time does she have to take some responsibility? And I can be completely honest with you, and I will say this. Even after shooting, you know, I've got a box full of gifts I bought for the rest of the ladies sitting in my living room in anticipation that we have a reunion and I can give them these gifts. Guess what? I've got one for Pilar. I honestly think at some point in time we might have been able to sit down at a table and talk. We don't have to like each other, but we can at least respect our differences. She talked about my kids on the radio. And, you know, she says a lot about how she's pro-family, pro-kids. She specifically said, you know, in reference to the boat incident, well, you know, in one of the episodes, you see Dawn's daughter on a stripper pole and her son tantruming. Well, that's my son with autism. And, you know, for her to reference my children, and then she basically said, well, look at their mother. I mean, really, I'm sorry. Once you talk about the kids, you take it to a whole different level. At that point in time, it's not worth me giving her any time. Don't talk about my kids.
Now, is there any way in the future that you two could possibly come together and I'm not asking you to be friends, but almost be amicable with each other?
I would say if she could apologize for talking about my kids, then I'd consider it. I can handle her talking and attacking my credibility and everything else, but when she talked about my kids, she really crossed the line.
Okay, I mean, and that's fair enough, and that's very understandable. Very understandable.
I mean, think about it. I mean, you can look at the situation. A lot of people ask about, you know, the argument Shanita and I had earlier in the season, and she told me she was going to walk me like a dog. I think Shanita's crazy. I love Shanita. I don't necessarily agree with the message and the way she delivered it that day, but the fact of the matter is I talked about her kids. I said something inappropriate to her children. So how could I then sit there and be mad at her for defending her kids? You know what I'm saying?
Did you think it was really that inappropriate, what you said to her kids?
Well, I've never had anyone tell me, oh, no, what I said to her kids, no, I was just playing with them. I actually didn't think it was that big a deal. But, you know, she's a mom, and she's going to protect her kids, and I can't blame her for that.
Right.
No. And let me say this. I can't speak for the other women on the show. I did not become a part of this cast of Football Wives to become famous. I didn't do it for any sort of notoriety. What I wanted to do, and I think Ryan and I have done it very well on the show, is tell what the story is like for the 80% of football players out there who weren't superstars, who weren't the Peyton
right.
Mannings and the Tom Bradys and the Deion Sanders, who are making league minimum, which is a great living. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it's not. But there are sacrifices that come with that. And we wanted to tell that story. We wanted to tell the story that 2 years after official retirement from football, 80% of players are in extreme financial distress. And that's our reality.
Right.
I mean, you know, everyone's like, who are these women? We ain't heard about any of these players but Deion. Okay, name me all 53 players on the Cowboys roster right now. For every 10 players you can actually name, there are 43 guys on that squad who you can't. That's football. So you don't, you know, football is not about being the superstar. It's really a team sport, and not everyone's going to be known. But this is the reality. What Ryan and I are living is the reality for a good majority of the players.
And talk about that reality, because like you said on the show, Ryan was a minimal salary player throughout his career. And that's anywhere between $450,000 to about, what,
$750,000. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So,
and, it, you know, people hear that number, less half of it's gone because of taxes. We don't see half
right.
of it because of taxes. And, again, still a very good living. But you figure he was a 7-year vet. His first 2 years in the league, he started out on the practice squad. And back then, practice squad players were making $53,000 a year. You know, I was in law school. He was supporting me through that. I mean, it was a decent living, but we weren't making millions of dollars. And I had someone
right.
say to me not too long ago, you know, as I'm trying to explain how it could happen that, you know, you're making a good living. You've got a couple $100,000 in the bank. You know, how do we get to this point? And like my girlfriend said, how do you plan for a special needs child? How do you plan
right.
for, you know, having a child who's going to need extra resources that insurance doesn't cover? How do you plan for the economy? You know, Ryan's last NFL season was 2007, and so many people have been like, he needs to just go and get a job. I'm sorry. Aren't there a lot of people looking for jobs right now who can't find them? Ryan does have a job, and he's working, but it's just so strange. I mean, even with this season and him getting, you know, cut from this NFL team, in essence, he got laid off. And why am I not
right.
entitled to feel the stresses of that? If you're a two-income family, because I do work, if you're a two-income family and someone loses their job, it's going to be stressful. And so we've been trying to tell that story.
Well, I think, Dawn, it's certainly, I think it's very interesting, and you bring up, as you said, the real, potentially the real message of what the show was really meant to project, and that's what I had brought up when we were just speaking with Pilar, which is, she seemed to be an outlier, because it's here you have one person who, it's essentially very different from many of the other cast members, and you're bringing up a very valid point, which is it's very, very, there's a huge misnomer in society that, oh, if you're an athlete or if you're an actor or some sort of celebrity, it just equates to endless, you know, troves of money and riches and excess, and the reality is that's, a very slim piece of the population that may be a celebrity. The reality is many of them, they, as you said, maybe make a very blessed living, but certainly not what society believes to be the reality.
Well, and here is the reality. The average NFL career is a little over 3 years. So even if you're making league minimum, you know, that money, how long is it going to take you to transition into another career so the money has to last you?
Believe me, better than anyone, I make it very well known, even if you have a 3-year career and you've got a guaranteed $15 million signing bonus after taxes, it's $7.5 million, if you're 22 years old and someone hands you $7.5 million, at 22, if you don't have a career behind you, that $7.5 million has to protect you and anything your life does for about 60 years. give or take.
Exactly.
It's not, people think it's a lot of money. It's not, given the fact that you're...
It's not a lot of money. And this is what this is how I try and explain, and this is what we've learned, okay? Ryan wasn't drafted out of college. He had a good career for someone not drafted out of college, but this is what we've learned. The NFL is going to be such a short chapter of your life that you have to go into the NFL, into an NFL career with a plan A, B, and C for when it's over. And if you're not thinking plan A, B, and C the day you step onto your first NFL field, you're going to be in trouble. Because if you wait until you're in the transition to try and start figuring things out, you're going to run into some issues. It's a very difficult transition. And a lot of players and their families struggle because of it.
And now you talk about being, you are a part-time lawyer. And in a lot of ways, you put your law career on hold from Ryan to pursue his football dreams. Now,
I absolutely did. Absolutely.
Hindsight 2020, but looking back on it, do you regret that decision?
I would never regret it. I'm one of those people who really believes God puts everything into our lives for a reason. And it's interesting you ask me about hindsight. Ryan and I were having a conversation this weekend, and it made me so sad. Because he actually sat there and you know, almost regretted an NFL career. I mean, I think he's looking and comparing himself to some of his friends he went to college with who didn't necessarily get, you know, into the NFL or play pro ball. And they've got great careers with stability. You know, they're making six figures and careers that are going to last them the next 20, 30 years. And here he is at 35 starting all over again. So in hindsight, it's like, oh, my God, what was I thinking? But how can you even go there? I would have supported him no matter what. But I absolutely and had put my career on hold and sacrificed for it. I mean, you know, I didn't practice for 5 years. All of a sudden I'm taking the Texas bar and competing with people in this economy who are right out of law school, who don't have families and kids and don't have to worry about sick days and stuff like that. It absolutely was a crutch, and I'm still working myself back up. But I don't regret it. No regrets there. Mm-mm.
And I actually was reading your website, which is dawnneufeld.com, and I noticed that you did some music videos. You were on with Instinct, LL Cool J, Snoop Dogg. I mean, talk about
I
that.
I did. That was during college. You know, I actually started acting when I was young. I had some bit roles on some of those old school classics like Webster and Punky Brewster and all those shows back in the day. When I got to college, I mean, I was in law school mode. I was going to law school, so it wasn't like I was pursuing an acting career. I had an agent, though, and gigs would come up. I mean, I made $800 for that Snoop video, and I got to swim around in a tank in a, you know, camouflage mermaid outfit all weekend. That's hard money to turn down. I enjoyed it. It was so much fun.
And now, you talked about being married to Ryan Neufeld, and he played 7 years in the league. And how difficult is it being married to a professional athlete? Or is it difficult
you know,
at all?
I think our difficulties are different than what people might assume would be most difficult. Groupies, cheating, stuff like
right.
that. That's just not Ryan. The difficulties came when we were waiting around on cut day. You know what I mean? Is this the year you're going to get the phone call and they call you and tell you to come bring your playbook into the stadium? You know, I remember when I was in law school and I get the calls that he got cut. The insecurity of it all, the constant moving around, that was always very difficult. Injuries. Let's talk about injuries. Let's talk about the fact that my husband's last year in Buffalo, very first game of the season, second half of the game, Kevin Everett literally almost died on the football field. It was a special teams play. My husband was out on the field. I found Ryan and was so glad he wasn't the player down on the field. But then when I realized it was Kevin, another tight end, you know, and the fact that he almost died, when you think about the fact that these guys are literally putting their lives on the line, you know, unfortunately the poor college kid from Rutgers wasn't as lucky as
right.
Kevin Everett. You know, those are right. very real scary aspects of the game. And I think, you know, the 23-year-old who was pulling for my husband and so pumped because he was on a practice squad versus the now 34-year-old with two children trying to enjoy the fact that my husband was out there on the field, it's a totally different game. And when he is out there, it's hard to enjoy the sport. That's crazy, right?
And,
but that's where things go, I think.
And many people really don't realize the toll, the physical toll that football takes on the person's body. I mean, that the physical toll is amazing. And a lot of these players,
I mean,
unfortunately, when they get older,
are
going to be having a hard time walking.
Exactly. We'll be paying for it forever. You know, I've heard so many people, you know, a lot of people on Twitter, on Facebook, you know, you guys aren't even playing anymore. Well, we have a saying, once a football wife, always a football wife. Because, you know, when Ryan needs his knees replaced when he's 40-something, I'm going to be the one
right.
carting him around and making sure he's okay. You know, we're pretty certain he's already dealing with some short-term memory issues. He was a tight end. Every
right.
single time he was on the field, he was hitting somebody with his head.
But, yeah,
and,
definitely.
You know, the NFL just in the past couple years, has actually admitted that there might be a connection between the constant hits on the field and the early onset Alzheimer's and dementia that we're seeing in a lot of former players when they hit their 50s and 60s. It's a very real thing we're going to have to deal with, and just another sacrifice. So when you talk about the money the guys are making on the field, you know, the long-term injuries are one of the sacrifices they make for the sake of a paycheck.
And real quickly, we talked about your son, Will, who has been diagnosed with symptoms of autism.
Yeah.
How much of a challenge has that been for you guys?
You know, it's been very difficult. And it was always sad to me to be out at a football game and to see the other wives there with their kids, and the kids have on their daddy's jerseys with their numbers on them. I could never bring Will to a game because of the crowd noise. It was always too loud. I never knew what was going to set him off. And, you know, then Ryan Neufeld's wife is in the stands with her kid going crazy. Because if you look at Will, it doesn't look like there's anything wrong, when in fact he's got some issues that make life difficult. He's probably at six, he's probably at the communication level of a 3-year-old. And because he can't communicate, he throws these tantrums that Pilar, you know, referenced. It's a symptom of what we have to deal with on a daily basis, and it's tough. I mean, when you talk about trying to go out to a restaurant to eat, you just never know what's going to set him off. But that being
right.
said, I will say this. When Ryan was playing football, we visited a lot of children in hospitals, a lot of sick kids, some of whom have since passed. And I think having that perspective helps me. You know, when we're having a bad day with Will, when we have those days where he's literally cried for an hour and a half and we can't do anything to calm him down, I let myself have a moment, I wipe away my tears, and then I say it's not cancer. You know, it's not
right.
something that's going to hurt my baby. This is what God has dealt us. Wipe off the tears, shake it off, and keep going. And that's why, you know, a lot of the charities we've been associated with Garth Brooks, Teammates for Kids, the Layla Grace Foundation, which deals with kids' rare childhood cancers like neuroblastoma, and then, of course, the Tackle Cancer Foundation, which another NFL wife and her husband started. That husband has since passed away, unfortunately. I guess I always feel like there are people out there who are suffering way worse than we are, and I always
right.
feel that need to help them. So,
we got another 30 seconds left. Real quickly, where can we find out information about Dawn Neufeld?
Okay, you can check out dawnneufeld.com. I'm on Twitter at DBN13. I also am so lucky to be able to blog for VH1.com after all the episodes. I give a lot of behind-the-scenes information there. I'm on Facebook. I mean, pretty much anywhere, and I'm the person that's going to respond to you. So if you send me a message, don't be surprised when I actually respond. So,
Dawn Neufeld, we thank you for stopping by. We appreciate
your
candor.
Thank you guys so much.
And we appreciate everything.
It as well.
And good luck with everything.
Thank you, guys. And thank you guys so much for your support. We really appreciate it.
No problem. Take
care. All right, you guys have a good night. All righty.
You too. Dawn Neufeld from VH1's Football Wives. We want to thank Pilar Sanders. We also want to thank Dawn Neufeld for stopping by and giving us their take on the show. It was definitely interesting. This was definitely a fun listen to, and this was a good show. But we want to thank them for stopping by. And again, you can listen to this show and other shows at blogtalkradio.com/vegan. For Jeremy, this is Paul Gann.